Excellent. So we'll call this meeting to order at 7:03. I apologize for being late. As chair of the conference select board, I find that due to the state of the emergency declared by Governor Scott as a result of COVID-19 pandemic and pursuant to addendum 6 of the executive order 01-20 and act 92, this public body is authorized to meet electronically. Does anyone have an objection if I don't go through all of this stuff?
No. What might be good, Emily, just as a suggestion, is to embed it in the agenda so that we don't have to recite it every time.
I think that's an excellent idea. Does anyone have an objection if I don't go through all this time? Is this going to be legal if I don't, Scott?
I honestly have not looked at that, whether it has to be read, but...
Well, this is what the VLCT, why don't I just go down through it quickly and then next time we'll put it on the agenda package. Okay. Providing public access to the meeting is by telephone, video, or other electronic means. We're using Zoom for this meeting. All members of the board have the ability to communicate that way, as does the public. We provided public notice of instructions for accessing the meeting, which worked. And they were at pomfretvt.us. We provided a mechanism for the public to alert the public body during the meeting if there are problems with access. And we will continue the meeting if necessary, if indeed the public is unable to access this meeting. It will be continued to a time, place certain. All votes taken during this meeting that are not unanimous will be done by roll call vote in accordance with the law. Can everyone say who is there so that Cindy has a count of who is around?
I can go down the list if it's easier.
That would be okay.
Okay. So myself, John Peters, and then I only have one phone number, 3205. Is that you, Ellen?
Yes, it is.
All right. So we have Ellen, Emily, Scott Woodward, Chuck Gunderson, Ben Brickner, Cynthia Hewitt, Ondine, which is Kathy Peters, Jim Potter, John Moore, John Ricketson, Richard Martin, and Steve Chamberlain.
Excellent. Does anyone have any next item? Is there any public comment for any items not on the agenda? Okay. Agenda review. Are there any things that anyone wishes to add or detract?
I have a question on clarity. Agenda item 5C talks about road closure, i.e. TIGO store construction, and it's a little bit unclear exactly what that agenda item is about.
I sent you some plans, I believe, that were sent to Jimmy, and Jimmy will discuss that. They want to close the road during their reconstruction of TIGO General Store so that they don't get hit while they're working in the road.
Okay, so the part that I'm confused about, though, is that isn't TIGO still looking for an approval of the plan from the town?
Yes.
And wouldn't the road closure follow that approval?
Well, they're going to start construction very soon. Unfortunately, all of that information that we need and the discussion with VTrans was put on hold until 2 weeks ago because of COVID-19. VTrans right. Basically shut down. I've started that process again through Rita Sejo, and she has now gotten some comments from them or is working with them to try and get that study together to figure out what we can do there safely and make the intersection work. Unfortunately, for a month or more, we haven't been able to get VTrans. We can't put a crosswalk in. All yep. of those things can't happen. And so they don't have permission to do anything yet because we couldn't get all that stuff together.
Right. So I understand all that, but the thing I'm trying to suss out here is whether I think we need to approve the plan first before we talk about road closure. Is that right?
They're looking to close the road so that they can work on the exterior of the store without getting run over.
Which, are you saying that's independent of approval of the plan?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's what I needed to know. I that wasn't clear to me.
They just want to be able to work. And as we discussed with them, what the Zoning Board of Adjustment lets them do with the building and whatever isn't in our scope of whatever. It's just that they want to start work. They don't want to, they're going to be working in the road.
Okay, understood. I just want to make sure it wasn't dependent on approving the overall, the plan.
They also want to know what's happening there as well. And I don't know whether Mr. Warden is going to come tonight or not. He wrote a letter to Cindy. And I said, you can write him back and say, we're working through VTrans, but things have been on hold because of COVID-19.
And we have one new person joining us. Who is 8549? You're broken up, whoever you are.
It's Neil Allen from the Vermont Standard.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyway, right. Are there any other agenda items that wish to be added or wish to be...
The only one I have is if we wish to talk about dog issues in town, whether broad or narrow, from what I sent you before.
I neglected to get that on there, but I was going to suggest that we add that somewhere and we can at least have a brief discussion as to how we wish to proceed.
Yep.
So shall we put that down just before artistry?
Yeah, wherever, it doesn't matter to me.
What's the dog issue?
There have been some dog complaints up Bartlett Brook Road.
Okay, all right. And just to be clear, we don't need an additional agenda item to talk about approving, to even talk about it. No, we're not going to vote, but to talk about approving the Tego store plan, like what are the next steps?
Well, we may not need a vote, but I think we better figure out whether we're going to let them close it all or part of it. There's also a driveway there. There's a fire department there, and there's tractor trailers that can't get from A to Z if they can't go through there. And yeah, they were talking about closing the whole thing. So
yeah, that part I get. The part I'm wondering whether we need to talk about tonight is what the next steps are for the other road changes that they want to make in conjunction with the renovation.
I don't have any answers for that yet. We can talk about it if you want in generalities, but there's no information other than what we had before. So that I have received. Rita's working on it, and I think we'll get there, but when everything closes up and they don't do anything, it's hard to get an answer.
Okay.
Any other items on the agenda? All those in favor of the agenda as we have changed it a little bit, signify by saying aye. John?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
And myself, aye. All right, approval of 4-1, 5-4, 5-6, and 5-13 meetings, minutes. Are there any issues with those minutes?
Yeah, I've got a couple of adjustments that should be made. So in regard to the May 6th agenda minutes. Oh boy. So just as a one thing to talk about in general, and we don't need to belabor it right now, but this is something we've talked about before in the past, but there's a lot of in our minutes, and what I'm speaking to right now is under paragraph 5H around the zoning regulations.
Do you have that up on your screen?
Yeah, you want me to share it?
Yeah, why don't you share it so we're all looking at the same thing? That'd be great.
Okay, you want to enable that so I can do that?
Oh, yep. Hold on. Once I figure out how to do it.
Okay.
It won't let you share.
No, it's not enabled, so I need to
try it now.
Yep, okay, that did it.
Beauty.
Okay, so what I'm referring to here in 5H is, and this is not just about the zoning regulations, this is in general. We tend to include a lot of commentary and opinion in the minutes, and that can be dangerous for a number of reasons, because it basically is an interpretation of what someone has said, and there's a risk of not reflecting those comments and opinions accurately. And on top of that, it's not really a great idea to include in the minutes opinion and commentary. And that's part of the reason why we've got the recording. So while I think it would be better off in the minutes if we just simply stick to what occurred, you know, there was a discussion about the zoning regulations, and then upon motion, the board voted to adopt the zoning regulation, just keeping it simple as minutes are really supposed to do. So that's the green highlighted area that is largely kind of opinion and commentary. And the same was true for the 401 minutes that I think Cynthia changed. So on 5H, it references in-person public zoning hearing no longer necessary. And that I do know that that's where we concluded, but it doesn't, there might need to be a little bit more said there about, I don't know if that was an agenda item. I think it was a separate agenda item. But it's not clear in the minutes here whether that is a reference to the agenda item itself or the zoning, you know, the in-person hearing. And I think what might be appropriate here is just to say something about the participation level in the hearing that took place on the 4th, and that, you know, something due to the participation level of May 4th, the board, by consensus, felt that an in-person hearing wasn't necessary. Just so there's a little bit more explanation there. And then jumping down to the May 13th minutes, there needs to be a correction about what Joe McLean said. It wrongful is not the right adjective here. But it's important to highlight what Joe did say. And Joe did say that because even though he, as the town's attorney, felt that there wasn't an open meeting violation, that nonetheless it was, quote, the notice was minimally adequate, in his words, and therefore the board should vote to ratify the adoption of the zoning regulations. Because it's not accurate the way it's stated here about deeming it to be wrongful. That's just not an accurate reflection of what Joe said. It would be better said if Joe offered an opinion that it was not a violation, but because the notice was minimally adequate, he recommended that the board vote to ratify the adoption of the zoning regulations. But those are my only comments on the minutes.
Anyone else have any thoughts as to what they do or don't want to change on these minutes?
Yeah, well, I agree with Scott on that last part. I mean, it's not that the complaint was wrongful. It was that the complaint was not, he didn't feel that the complaint, Joe McLean didn't feel that the complaint was valid because the article item, the agenda item was was warned, and he did say that it was only minimally so, but I'm not sure what difference that makes. You know, it was warned. So I think that I would just correct that to say that the complaint was not valid or whatever, but it wasn't wrongful. He was perfectly right to make a complaint if he wanted to. So wrongful is the wrong word.
Yeah, and just for everybody's sake here, the point was, as I mentioned to the board, Joe's words were minimally adequate, and while that may satisfy the law, that probably isn't the standard we want to aim for here. We should aim for something better than minimally adequate, in my opinion.
May I say something?
Yeah.
With regard to Scott's earlier comment about the minutes being too extensive, as just a town resident, I think that there are a lot of people who don't have the time to listen to the recordings, and to read through the minutes takes much less time and still gives them a gist of what the discussion has been and what the points have been that people have made in the discussion. So I know that legally there's nothing, no requirement to do anything except record the discussion, I mean the decisions that are made, but I think it's great to have a little bit more extensive information available for people in writing.
I've also gotten when the previous minutes the previous minute taker was taking the minutes, not Michael but Jonathan, I had complaints, more than one, that you know we really would like to know more than just such and such was discussed, and sometimes there's not even a decision, and they thought that the minutes were too minimal. So there are two sides to the coin, and as long as it accurately depicts what was said, if you read Barnard's minutes, they take up half a page, and you don't have any idea what was said or what the discussion was, and that's more minimal than I would like to see. But that's a personal opinion, So, do you want to change these minutes to take out that or not? This is a board decision. So we need an item to adopt. Those were the 5-6 meeting minutes. So let's have a motion to adopt those or adopt them with corrections.
Well, I would move that we adopt them with the corrections that I offered, with the exception of strike anything that's opinion or commentary, that we leave the commentary and opinion in there.
So basically we'd be changing the item regarding Joe McLean and the complaint being invalid.
That, and also a little bit more descriptor about why the in-person hearing was deemed not to be necessary.
Okay. Does anyone else have anything they'd like to change on those minutes?
I'll second Scott's motion.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to change those two things in the minutes, and all those in favor say aye. John?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself is aye. Now let's go on to the 5:13 minutes. Does anyone have any difficulty or problems with those?
We actually just covered those too. That was the Joe McLean.
Yep. Okay. No, the 5:13 minutes were the ones we had the special meeting.
Right. And that, if I recall, if I'm looking at it correctly, that was the same one that I referred to in 4C.
Yes, it was. You're right. I'm sorry.
Sure.
So, warrants for approval. I have those numbers here. We have warrant 19109 for $261.21. 19014 for $5,604.60. And 19110 for $922,510.43. Ellen sent those all to you. Does anybody have any questions on those? Well, let me first say, I move that we pay these warrants. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Are there any questions on any of those warrant items? Then are you ready to vote on those? Yes? No? Anybody?
Sure.
Yes.
All those in favor of paying those three warrants, signify by aye. John?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Scott? Scott?
I muted myself. Sorry about that. Aye.
That's okay. We can read your lips. Steve?
Aye.
And I'm an aye. Okay. We got through there. Items for discussion. Road Commissioner report. Jimmy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're on.
Okay. So we've been ditching up on Howe Hill, Justin and Art have been up there ditching on Howe Hill. We've made it to the top. We haven't been putting any stone in the ditches or anything, just trying to get the ditches cleaned up for right now. The Howe Hill project is, they've got all the culverts in. They've been working on the outlet ends of them all. They still got some work to do on the inlet ends of them. But that whole Howe Hill project is moving along fairly nice now. Let's see what else. Been doing some ditching and grading down still on the north end. Pulling the ditches in. They've been picking it up and hauling it away. Those roads are coming along pretty good. The pickup. I know we had a discussion on the pickup and some repairs that had to do. 1600 and I can't remember without looking here, but it's a little over $1,600 worth of wear. Got it up there. They called me yesterday and said that it needed a drag link on it, on the steering, and it was going to need some tie rod in. So I had to make a decision on my own to get it fixed while it was up there, being a safety issue. That total bill is going to come to $2,714.36. I did talk to him a little bit about the wearing of the tie rods and this and that on the front of it. And pretty much the bundle of the story was, number one, all that stuff comes through without any grease fittings on it anyway. And running a plow and everything on the front of it and doing what we do with it, we've got to expect this to happen. The crack sealing guys, they finished up on the end of Stage Road today. They got done with the $25,000 ones, and then they come in and started working on the $15,000. And they still had a little over a day left to do some more crack sealing, so they're planning on coming back tomorrow. And from everything that they've crack sealed, what was left was from Sugar House Road down. And that's beyond its point, and I felt that it wasn't worth going down there and wasting money on that section of road with cracks. So with that being said, we did not spend all the $15,000, and they are officially done crack sealing for us this year. Cy Benoit called me, touched base a little bit. He said he talked to Al Romero to remove the trees down here on this end, the south end of town. Al pretty much has said that he didn't know me quite a while before he came back. But me and Cy talked about it. And Cy said that he was going to, you know, if we were to stay with Al, which I figured we probably would. As I said, right now, the way the budget is, probably wouldn't hurt to just set an idle with it anyway. So he said he would stay on to him throughout the summer and try to get it done before summer. And then the number two truck, I know we talked about the front end of the number two truck, trying to hold out, you know, and talk to the guys that we're going to trade it with and whatnot. But it's something to think about in the future here coming up. That truck's going to need an inspection come the end of June. And I don't know as if it will or won't pass inspection the way that it is. And that's pretty much about everything that I really.
Hey, Jim, on the number two truck, just to be clear, our situation is, because we're not going to have a replacement for that truck by June, right?
Correct.
So we're kind of, our choices are no repair or repair.
Correct.
And everything hinges on the inspection, right? If we can get past inspection, then we can milk it until we get the new truck.
Correct. And the issue is, when they take these trucks and trade, they have to either be inspected or you know what I mean? They have to be a valid inspection.
Right.
So, no matter how we look at it, it would have to be inspected.
Okay.
I do know that I talked to Sables about it back when this whole problem resolved, and they, one of the guys' mechanics said down there, it's kind of marginal even to be able to, I mean, you know, there shouldn't be a lot of weight at that point in time, he didn't seem to think, on being able to inspect it. So we'll see. We'll take it down there and give it a shot.
Okay. So it is, I know, I remember we talked about this, but it's been a little bit. Is the list of stuff that needs to be done equal to or smaller than what needs to be done to get it to pass inspection?
When you say the list of stuff, everything that it needed to be done on it is done, other than that front end issue.
Okay, so just the front end, and that's the big question mark.
Yeah, and that was, I can't remember without going back and looking at the numbers again, but that was a fairly pricey deal.
Right. Okay.
And then the other thing that I do have here is back in November, September, I started dealing with Nortrax on the wing control system on the grader because they were sticking, and one of them had kind of broke off out on the exterior part, the plunger did. And so they got me the part, but then they come up to fix it, and it was happened to be that the part weren't going to work. And so they've been back and forth, and back then there was only one part that was in the country, and they were in hopes that we didn't need it. Well, they have since learned, so we went without a wing as it was until they got this information. But they have since learned now that it is going to need that valve replaced on it, and it is the only one in the country, and they are no longer making that part. So he gave me two options. One option was, he didn't even give me a price on it. One option was to rip all that system out of it and put a whole new system in it, which he said was ridiculous money. They will do the replace the cables in it and get that valve coming for $5,407.09. They don't have to do the work right now, but he really suggests that with us hanging on to this grader, we're going to want to use the wing. On any note, we should at least spend the $2,700 to get that valve box coming, so that, because it's the only one left in the country. Who knows if anybody else ever needs it.
Right.
I sent you all that document just before the meeting, when Jimmy sent it to me, that price sheet from Nortrax.
Right.
So you all have that.
Yeah, I saw that. Well, I mean, we're kind of in the middle of high grading season right now, so I don't know how much downtime we can afford, right?
Yeah, no, I don't want to put it down, but I think with his advice, because see up in there it says this work can be performed at a later date, but the valve is the last one in the country and would recommend getting ordered as without the machine may need to be fitted with a new style system. So he's essentially, I had him send this over to me, and he knows that he's not going to be able to come in and do the work right off.
Yep.
But I told him we ought to at least get the vote and see if we can't spend the $2,700 just to get that valve bank so we know we have that so we can get it fixed.
So just to secure the part then?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
I suggest that we do that.
Yeah, I mean, if the part's not going to be any cheaper later, right? And we need it, so.
No, and his fear of it is, seeing how it is the last one, that if it's gone, we're really screwed.
Right.
They're going to then have to redo the whole system. You
know, Right.
I mean, I move that we... Go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to say, at a minimum, we should at least secure that part, right?
Yeah. So I move that we go ahead and purchase that part, and then we can get it installed at a later date.
Correct.
Okay. I'll second that.
All right.
Okay. Any more discussion? All those in favor of securing the part for the grader, signify by saying aye. John?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Okay. Anything, what else you got, Jimmy?
That's it. For me, I mean, we got the sand to talk about, so that's it for me.
That's further down the road. Howe Hill adjustments. John Harrington, did he ever send you anything today, Jimmy? I didn't get anything in my email.
The only thing that I got sent to me, and I should forward that on, that was my bad. But he sent me, he said that, well, I think you had gotten it too, maybe not, but was just the, about the culvert.
Refresh, I may not have read that thoroughly. I think that came this morning, and I was on my way out the door. What did he say about the culverts?
It says, let's see, I do not have any new report regarding Pike Industries' inquiry about extra costs for extra material windowing. I think Pike's inquiry about getting compensated for the polypropylene pipe is ready to be voted on. You will recall that Pike is requesting to be compensated for $4 per linear foot extra for the 18-inch diameter polypropylene pipe versus the cheaper polyethylene pipe that they reported on their bid. With the actual footage shown below, this would come to 882 feet times $4 or $3,528. And then it goes on to say the culverts on Howe Hill are now complete and we have measured actual linear footage installed and verified with the contract. The actual linear footage is broken out below. So it says mainline culverts under Howe Hill, actual 842 feet. The bid quantity was 720 feet. Additional cost equals 842 minus 720 equals 142 feet at $32 per foot, which equals $4,544. Sideline culverts actual, there was 40 feet. Bid quantity was 80 feet. Additional cost equals $1,280. The 48-inch 1 4-footer culvert actual was 80 feet. Bid quantity was 90 feet. Additional cost of that is $820. Total additional cost to project from culverts equals $2,444. Then he says, note that per my review with Jim Potter, the town will be removing at least 3 18-inch headwalls from the project of $1,200 per each or $3,600. So this will offset the additional culvert costs above.
So basically, we've gotten the gray culverts for the additional cost of the gray culverts for underages on some of the footage and also removing 3 headwalls.
Correct.
So we're at the bid right now, we're even, so we don't have to do anything. Am I understanding that correctly?
See, that's, I guess, yeah. I mean, it's very confusing to me because it says, you know, the actual footage is 3,528 feet. $3,528. And then when you come down, the mainline culverts, for him to put them in is $4,544. And then it says sideline culverts was an additional $1,280. And then it says the 4-footer was an additional $820. And then it says total additional cost to project from culverts is $2,444.
I think it's because we had.
So I'm wondering.
We ended up using less culvert than was spec, so that is probably part of the lower number.
Well, I think because John isn't here to explain this, and I kind of thought he was going to, give us some recommendations tonight, and I guess I was mistaken, but I would suggest that we get an explanation from John, and we will deal with this at the next meeting. Pike is working on. They know that we're not trying to cheat them out of something, or vice versa, and we'll get it straightened out by the next meeting and get the actual situation. Does that sound reasonable to everyone?
I'd be in the agreement with that. We may have to vote to change the spec, even though it will still fall under what the proposed budget was, just because there was a change in the spec. But that is probably just making it so
the fewer changes we can make, the better it's going to be for us.
But, yeah.
I think we need to get John in here to discuss this before we do anything about it. Is that going to be all right, Jimmy, do you think, as far as Pike is concerned?
I mean, I haven't really talked too much over with it about to Pike or anything like that, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they still got a long ways to go on this project, so I think they're going to be around for a day or two. At least I hope so. So with that being said, I would think that we got plenty of time here to get it resolved.
Sounds good. You now also have on here windrowing, and I got an email regarding windrowing from Sharon, and they wondered what we had decided to do about that. I told them that we were discussing it tonight, and I would know better in the morning, and so I think they're leaning toward letting Pike do the windrowing as well. Because if they don't and they bring in hard pack for the shoulders, it's going to be quite a bit more expensive. And so we as a board, I think, need to decide whether we're going to let Pike windrow or whether we're going to bring in hard pack. Am I giving an adequate description of that, Jimmy? You know, yeah. More than I do.
Yeah, no, you are. And I mean, in the bed, that's how they bid it off, was like, I can't remember now, I think it's like 40 cents a foot to do the shoulder, which is a ridiculous price, but hey, whatever, it is what it is. And I figured out to like $3,900 or something like that to do the shoulder. And anything above and beyond that, if with them doing it any different way, sounded to me like it was going to be some additional money, maybe. But I was very clear with John and very clear with Pike that you guys do your shoulder however you want, but you need to know this is how you put it in there. If you don't want a windrow and it costs you extra money, that's the road you pick, but you have to do the shoulders and they have to be done right.
Yeah.
And I think we need to leave it exactly the way they bid on it. And they, you know, at that point in time, they seemed to think it was going to work, so it ought to work now. But that's me.
And that's to go with the windrowing then. Right?
Yep.
Does anybody have any feeling about that?
I agree with Jimmy on this.
Yep.
John? I do as well.
I would agree.
Chuck, are
yes,
you on board?
I'm agreeing. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So when do we need a vote on this windrowing? I don't believe we do. They're just going to stick to their bid. So windrowing it is? By consensus?
Windrowing it is.
Yep. Okay. I will tell Sharon that. I'll email them later or tomorrow morning. Road closure, Tego store construction. I believe I sent you those plans. They're kind of hard to see. And Jimmy, did you talk to the gentleman regarding this?
I did. Yeah, he had called me and wanted to talk to me about road closure down there. And there was a few things that I had discussed with him. And I said, you know, I said, the biggest thing of it is there are like the fire trucks and stuff like that that need to come out and whatnot. And he explained to me on the safety end of it. And I said, no, I hear you there and I understand that. He said that they would try and keep that lane open down through there, that one lane open, but it would more or less have to be where a lot of the traffic, they, you know, would come around the library street, but he would make it so people could get down by there, but they were going to need room enough to set staging up and ladders up and whatever else they were going to have to do in the road and feel safe doing. And so that's why I told him, well, you come to us and let us know what you want and we sit down and talk about it. But, and I understood his safety concerns down there, you know, as well. So, and that's when he put it together.
Now, you were talking to me about tractor trailers being able to navigate down through there. What do you recommend regarding this road closure and that?
Well, you know, at first I told you that tractor trailers will have to go down that way. But now that I've thought about it a little bit and whatnot, I have, with my tractor trailer, I was going out by the library and quite a few different times I would come in by the library. So I think going that way, they're fine. The only thing of it is the fire trucks and your residents that live up there, I think you're going to have to keep that open so that they can at least get out of there both ways.
I don't want to speak for the fire department because I'm not on it, but I can speak from experience. It is, I do think we should keep one lane open there. It is possible to turn right out of the fire station with the fire truck. It is tight, however, so. But yes, they need to be able to get out of there. So,
are you talking about keeping one lane open, turning left? Is that what you mean?
I mean, you can go left or right with the fire truck coming out of there as long as you're careful. So,
yeah,
you know, right. You just need to be aware of what you're doing. But they also need to be. The store needs to. Yes, be able to set up some kind of a barrier there so that they can, I mean, without having at least one line closed, they're not going to be able to work on the store. So we certainly need to be accommodating there as well. So,
they had depicted in their plan a Jersey barrier above the bridge by the firehouse at the back end of the Tego store. If they did that, that would preclude anyone from going up through there, going north out of the fire department driveway or Sean Pickett's driveway. Am I correct in that, Jimmy, or did I read those plans incorrectly?
Well, in an email.
Yeah. I mean, that was what I was seeing was there's a Jersey barrier going just up past, more or less past the end of the backyard store parking lot or back entryway right there, and then there was a Jersey barrier coming down closer towards the stage road, and Jersey barriers going down through is what I see, and then up to the Y from the way it looks up to the Y where if you're coming from north headed down through, instead of turning to the library, they're going to put a sign right there that road closed, but it says road closure sign, vehicles can drive past this. So.
Did this get shared in an email to everybody so I can see it or?
I thought I sent it to you guys.
No, I saw the plans for the store, its exterior itself. with the curbing and stuff. I don't.
There were two sets of plans on that. There were two plans there on the same email, John.
Yeah, I did look at it. I'm just trying to find it so I can look at it now. You don't remember when you sent it?
The last couple of days, I would think.
Yeah, yesterday, I think. Maybe the day before.
Cindy only sent it to me on Sunday, I think. Saturday or Sunday. She came and asked me what should she do with the letter. It might have even been Monday, and I said, well, you know, tell him back we were having a meeting Wednesday night and he's on the agenda. Yeah, it must Cindy have been Saturday because I put it on the agenda.
Cindy sent it on the 18th to us.
So that was Sunday.
Yeah.
I found it.
Monday.
The right one. Sorry.
Well, Jimmy, while John is looking at the plans, do you feel that you want to exclude all but fire department and Sean Pickett traffic from the Sean Pickett side, in other words, Pomfret Road, and defer all traffic to Library Street? Or do you want to maintain that northbound lane so that people can go north on Pomfret Road, and yet if they come south, they've got to go to Library Street, to that intersection, and then bear left to continue on Pomfret Road? What's preferable for you, do you think?
Well, I mean, I guess, I mean, they got to do the work and whatnot down there. And me being a person that has to work in the road, the less traffic you have going by you, even if you got a barrier up, the safer you do for you. With that being said, my opinion on it would be if we can just kind of utilize it to where the fire department and the pickets can use it, then that's great. If we can't, and we find that we get into this and there's tractor trailers or something that are having issues with that, then it's just a matter of moving a few jersey barriers and readjusting to that. But for now, I'd like to see it to where it's just the fire department and the pickets going down through there.
I guess.
And tell them that if that doesn't work and tractor trailers are having problems, then we may have to readjust it.
Right.
I would just make a condition of it that they consult and get an agreement from the fire department. Mostly Kevin, that their needs for getting in and out of there are met, and then as well as the pickets, and then other than that, that they could do it.
Sounds good. Do we need to take a vote on that? And if so, I need a motion.
I make a motion that we allow the closure of Pomfret Road in the vicinity of Tego store to allow them to work on the exterior of the building, providing they consult with the chief of the fire department, Kevin Rice, and the pickets to allow them access in and out of their driveways.
Before we settle on the motion, do we need to put a time frame on the motion?
Yes.
They've asked for June 1st to November 15.
I would give them till
November 1st.
I was going to say October 15th with the possible extension depending on, I don't know if we want to put that in there or not, but it'd be nice to have it done and out of with before snow. Unless Jim has a different thought on that.
No, I'm right along with you. They need to be out of there before it's snow. Yep.
So why don't we say October 15, and if they need to extend that, they can come back and talk some more.
Yeah, if they run into something major and, you know, it's just totally not feasible, we'll reconsider it, but not count on it.
Okay.
does the second still stand with that amendment or addition?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, he's just amending his original motion. That's fine.
Any more discussion? All those in favor, John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Okay. Opening of sand bids and awarding of the contract. I did not check the office. The two people that I sent the sand proposal to, both D&D Excavating and also Twin State Sand and Gravel, i.e. Blacktop, both replied, one today and one on the 8th of May. And I sent both of those proposals to you today. And I do not know whether they put physical copies up at the office. I asked them to submit them electronically. And I am not, and maybe I'm not, I did not look at them until this evening when I printed them off to have them before me. I don't know what the legality of opening the bids is. I guess we've opened the bids when we opened our email electronically. But anyway, so we, if you want to look at those, we need to make a decision as to where we're going to get sand this winter, just regular sand, not the stuff from Twin State, the coarser aggregate.
When did the are they both in the same email or separate emails?
I only have one from Twin State. I don't have
D&D. You should have gotten as well. I may have sent that yesterday or the day before. I didn't receive Twin States until today. D&D has given us a price of for 2,450 yards, equivalent to 3,500 tons of screen sand, price delivered to the town garage, 100 Labounty Road, $13.50 per yard, or $9.45 per ton. That's delivered. That's the same outfit that we bought sand from last year.
Yep.
Twin State Sand has given us three kinds of sand, 3,500 tons, screened sand, price plus delivery, $14.95. Manufactured sand, price plus delivery, $16.35. And super grit winter sand, $15.85 a ton. So D&D is significantly lower than both than any of the products that Twin State is offering to deliver.
Emily, you said they were D&D was $9 a ton, because for some reason I don't see that one either.
$9.45 a ton.
Okay. Yep.
Did I send that to you, Jimmy?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Geez, I thought I sent it to all of you.
I got it.
Cindy, did you send it to them? You sent it for me, didn't you?
I still can't find D&D's. I only have Twin States.
Did you look under Cindy sending it?
Yeah, I think I just found it. Yeah, it's down on it's down.
Can you hear me?
It was sent Sunday.
John, can you hear me?
Yes.
The D&D quote comes as part of a letter. It's not an invoice like the other one, so it's kind of hard to find the price.
So that one's from Cynthia Hewitt, and it was sent on Sunday. So it was sent to all of us. So you should be able to find it.
Is it? Oh, okay. I got it. I got it now.
Yeah, it's the whole RFP, but the price is actually in the letter. That's the first page.
Right. But,
and the total was like 33,000 and something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I got it as well.
Okay. So what's
I found it now.
Yep. What's the math here? 33,075 versus what?
Well, if you do it by the ton price, D&D delivered is $9.45, and Twin State / Blacktop is $14.95, $16.35, or $15.85 a ton.
So basically the main difference between D&D and Twin States is D&D includes delivery in their price.
The prices I just wrote, the prices that I just gave you for Twin State included delivery.
No, I know, but if you look at their unit price per ton.
Right, their unit price is less, but the unit price doesn't include the delivery.
Right.
Yeah.
Are we totally sure that, I'm just looking at the D&D one now. $9.45. Does it? Are we?
It says price delivered to town garage.
$9.45. Okay, so we're kind of getting a deal there on the $9.45, including delivery.
It's cheaper. Absolutely. Price.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's huge.
I'll make a motion. We go ahead and purchase the sand from D&D at the $9.45 a ton delivered for $33,075.
I'll second that. Any more discussion? John, Chuck, Scott, any more discussion?
No.
All those in favor of that motion then? John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
And myself, aye. On to the next item. I will write D&D that they have the bid. And Jimmy, can they start delivering anytime?
I will talk to them, yep, and see if they will start.
I'll have them call you, and I will thank Twin State for their proposal.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Truck RFP. Did you do anything with that, Steve?
So I met with Jimmy, and we discussed it a little bit. This is kind of news to John because I went down and just met with Jimmy one morning. But anyways, with our discussion, Jimmy felt that if we could just change, or we, with our discussion, we felt that we could just change the dates and just send out the same RFP that we did before and just get another wheeler with the same specs as we did before.
Uh-huh.
The four-wheel drive truck, the problem that we ran into before when they brought it up and we looked at it, it wasn't going to fit in the garage once you put a body on it.
Right.
And with doing a little bit of research, even with the new 23,000 pound front end, they haven't got all of the bugs worked out of those either.
And that's the only front end they'll sell you anyways now, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So even going that route, we're not out of the woods on the front end issues, as well as, unless we do something different with the garage, we're not going to get it in there. I mean, that thing was a monster.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, another six wheeler, not or.
Jimmy felt another 10 wheeler would be for the money would be fine. And I got to agree with him. I mean, that's what came out of our discussion.
So two 10 wheelers, right? That's where we're going.
That's where we would be. And then the one 6 wheeler that already coming this fall as well. So,
okay. I mean, I think there were some pretty strong arguments in favor of 10 wheelers before, just from an economy standpoint.
Oh, the resale value is going to be extremely high compared to the 6 wheelers.
Yeah, right. But also in terms of carrying capacity and number of trips.
Yep. Efficiency. Yeah, yep. It's going to be huge.
The only thing, and you guys know this better than I do, but the only thing, it's obvious, it can't be an issue, is maneuverability around, I think we had a conversation at one point in time that the 10-wheeler would be kind of limited in its range.
With some conversation, especially with the surrounding towns that have gone to them, as well as manufacturers, for the most part, the 10-wheeler is going to turn as sharp as our current 4-wheel drive 6-wheelers are.
Yeah, they're going to have a tighter creep angle in the front because they're not 4-wheel drive. So.
Okay, so you guys aren't worried about maneuverability on the back roads?
I'm not. You, Jim?
No.
Okay.
The only thing I mean is a few turnarounds might be a little bit tight, but there's room for improvement there. So
I think we take that opportunity to improve those turnarounds because they're not adequate for the trucks we have now. So
yep.
I think if you made them adequate for the trucks we have now, they would be more than adequate for a 10-wheeler. So.
Yep.
Jimmy, what does a 10-wheeler do for you plowing wise wintertime? Is it better, worse, equal?
When you say, well, number one, I've never run a 10-wheeler plowing. So with that being said, you're kind of, you know what I mean? I don't know. Other than I do know that the savings on the 10-wheeler is going to be the sanding and whatnot, your return time on it. I've got a pretty good idea. You're not going to have as much money into some overtime because, you know, that truck, you're going to go a lot further with it. So you're going to be coming back and forth, busting the bridge. So I think the recovery end of it, that's where it's really going to show.
Yeah, that part seems obvious. I'm kind of trying to zero in on whether there's any I'm just thinking about your plow routes, right? And I don't know, and this may be a conversation for another day, but the current plow routes are designed around the current trucks. And I don't know if you'll need to rejigger those routes based upon the 10-wheeler or not.
I don't foresee it because like John was just saying, the turnarounds, like he said, they gotta be, some work's gotta be done to them anyways. For the trucks that were turning around in with them already. And as far as the plow and the wing goes, the plow and the wing are going to be no bigger, nothing than what's on the other truck. So I think it should be, everything should go good.
So it kind of sticks in half dozen the other then.
You also have to remember that even if we got this RFP out today, we would not get a truck for another year and a half, probably at least a year. And from what Jimmy has said and Steve, we will have both those trucks at some point through the winter. One of them we should have before winter, and the other one we may get in the winter. So right. We'll know what they're doing. And if you put out an RFP and you get a bid on it, and you say, order the truck, my guess is that if you order that truck and it takes almost a year to get it built into you, that if indeed you found that they were not maneuverable, you could change those specifications and say, this just isn't working. We've got to go to a plan B. And they would be willing to do that. Am I wrong or not?
I don't know. Maybe.
I think you might be right, Emily, because
they have a market for these 10-wheelers.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other part of it is these trucks that we're specking, we're not getting anything out of the ordinary. So even another town would, you know, pick it up if it didn't work for us.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
It's not like we're asking for a bunch of, you know, bells and whistles and all that kind of stuff on them. It's the same specs as other towns are doing.
Right.
Well, I say get the proposal together and we'll approve it at the next meeting and then we'll send it out.
Yeah, we'll just need to make any changes. There are a few changes to those trucks
from
what we sent out. So we just need to make those and get that in there. But shouldn't take too much. So.
There was the whole thing about changing the seats, right?
The seats, and there's a couple other minor things, I think, wasn't there, Steve?
There was.
But
you and I can get together and we'll go over those and have it ready for the next meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
That sounds good. Dan Maxim driveway permit. Jimmy and Chuck, you went to this. What's the scoop? I do not have that permit. That's still up at the town office, but I can go get it and we can, I can put conditions on it and we can send it back to Dan.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, we met and Jimmy had it all staked out already before I got there, as far as sight lines, as far as the width of the driveway, as far as depth into the driveway for the negative grade. And it looked to me, and I think it looked to Jimmy and to Dan as if it would work just fine. So that's the way I see it.
Are you going to put any conditions on this, Jimmy?
Well, the biggest thing that we've got to deal with on right now, and there is a town culvert that crosses where they widened that access. When the last logging crew was in there, they buried it all up in good shape. I cannot even find the lower end of it. But since then, I've taken a little bit more time and dug into some things today. And both the 2013 culvert inventory and the 2019 culvert inventory, which is weird, the 2019 says there is a culvert there, but unknown, couldn't find it. 2013 had a description on it that it was open. So with that said, I know there's a culvert that crosses that. That would hamper him, I'm sure, once we dig that culvert up. I do know in the years past, another logging outfit was in there. He used to work for the town for many years, and he came to me and wanted to put some sticks in the end of that culvert to be able to get log trucks in, and he did. But that is never taking water, a bunch of water down through there anyway. So we have a culvert issue there that we have to address. And if we have to address it, there's a few ideas that I would recommend that we would do it.
So would that culvert then, that would come out, or that the entrance to that culvert would be above his driveway toward the town garage, right?
Yeah, but when you're talking right now, I've got it marked out the minimum of the 16-foot wide. Well, I think that's about all he's going to have for an access. If we put that, dig that culvert up and put that culvert exactly where it is. And that's not going to be adequate enough for him to be able to come in and out of there with the equipment that he's going to, with his business and whatnot. That won't even begin to be adequate.
No.
So can you put the culvert further up?
My suggestion would be to it, and I even mentioned it to Dan a little bit when we met down there. One of my suggestions to it is that hardly takes any water at all. We could dig the culvert up, move it further up the road, but then we're going to be getting into government property where it would drop out. So you'd have to deal with the government. I mean, you're going to deal with some changes there that you would have to work it out with the landowners that are on that side. I suggest we take the culvert out before it collapses in the road or anything of that nature. Get it out of there. If Dan so chooses to put his access in, tell Dan that he has to have an 18-inch culvert, 40 feet long, if that's what he so chooses to be or whatever his swing's going to be. And goes underneath his driveway and goes down along the town road.
Yeah, I'd be in favor of that. That sounds like a good idea. You're just talking about doing away with the culvert altogether because not much water comes down there. Putting a culvert parallel to the town road under his driveway to just continue what water does come through down the ditch in front of that hayfield that's there.
Correct, John. And I wouldn't even really... Like I told them is I, no matter what, we're going to have to get down there and dig this culvert out of there because I'd hate like that, no matter what, to have him see him put his access in there, and we just say, well, go to the, you know, blind side on the culvert and then have something happen to that culvert. And then we got to dig his driveway and everything. So that being said, on the bare minimum, the town would have to go down and dig that culvert out. And then when we give him his access, he has to put his access in like everybody else would. Put an access culvert down there, 18 inch, run it down along the edge of the road, and the water will go down where it does.
Yep.
And then there's ledge back there within his 20 feet. And we had a conversation about that. And he said that he would get a big piece of his equipment in or whatever. And we told him he had to be at the negative on it, 20 feet back. And we stood there quite a ways back in, inside that 20 feet. And some cars were coming down from up John's way. And we could see them as they were coming away, when they were coming around the bend of the bandrail way up. And so he's got plenty of sight distance there both ways.
Yeah.
And I would hate like hell to see a young individual that's looking to stay in town, have something like that not work for somebody that's looking to stay in town.
Okay, so then you would move to give Dan the driveway permit with the condition that he get his 20 feet of level or negative grade adjacent to the town road, and that we dig up the culvert that goes across the road that might hinder his driveway, and he puts in an 18-inch culvert at his driveway to take the water coming around the corner.
Right.
Yes? Then I move that we do that. Is there a second?
I second it.
Any more discussion? All those in favor, John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
And myself. Okay. We now have a vote to ratify and confirm the Select Board's action of May 6, 2020, adopting zoning regulations. Yes. And this is here at the advice of Joe McLean, that we, just so that there is no cloud over the adoption of the zoning regulations regarding the May 6 meeting, and perhaps not as adequate notice of the vote as we might have had. And so is there any discussion of this item?
I don't want to belabor it because I'm pretty sure how the board's going to vote. But I did submit a letter to the board, and I would just like that letter included as part of tonight's record, as part of the minutes. But it just says a lot of what I've said already in my feelings about the zoning regulations, but I don't want to belabor it tonight because I don't think it's going to change the outcome.
Yeah, I'm happy to include the letter in the record. So,
any other discussion? Any public discussion? Okay, then we need a motion.
Move that we vote to
use the same language that's on the agenda, John.
Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Joe insisted that we do that.
Back up to it. Where are we? I make a motion that we vote to ratify and confirm the Select Board's action of the May 6, 2020 adopting the zoning regulations as voted at the May 6th meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor, John?
Aye.
Scott?
Opposed.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself, aye. Next on the agenda, what improvements to the zoning regulations the select board would like to see in the amendments on which the planning commission is working?
So, you know, I guess in keeping with the letter that I submitted to the board and in keeping with a lot of the discussion that has preceded the votes, I think clearly one of the improvements that needs to be made sooner than later is adopting a quantitative sound standard. I understand, or I think the Planning Commission is working on doing just that. And hopefully that is something that's actively being worked on. And if that's the case, we can get that going here, and it shouldn't be too challenging to get an amendment circulated and go through the process again. So that's one improvement. I think the ship has sailed, if you will, in regard to standalone industrial uses in the rural district now with the adoption of the zoning regulations. But I would encourage the Planning Commission and the board to look more holistically at the zoning regulations that were just adopted. And if the underlying premise of the changes is to encourage, as has been said prior to this meeting, is to encourage economic enterprises, even in the rural district, I would look at things like, why wouldn't we open up primary retail, for example, in the rural district? Why wouldn't we allow hardware stores or another Tego General store in the rural district if the underlying premise of conditionally allowing standalone light industrial in the rural district is to encourage economic activity? We should be looking at other changes to the zoning regulations to do just that, to encourage other economic enterprises.
Are you done? Sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
So that's another, you know, if the board's logic in having just adopt part, you know, the logic in having approved the zoning regulations with the conditional permission, you know, of standalone light industrial, I think it behooves the town to look more broadly at what other things it might try and encourage. And I'd also like to open up in the vein of affordable housing. I think it's an opportunity to look at adopting 1 acre lot sizes, which would vastly reduce the cost of trying to set up a homestead. So those are just a couple of the changes that I think that would be improvements to the zoning regulations.
I'm not opposed to a sound ordinance in general. I just think we need to be very careful as to what it is, how it's applied, and who it's applied to. Given that we're a small town of without a history of issues, I think we could potentially create more problems for ourselves as the town, as well as people of the town, if it's not done correctly. So I guess it's important to have it right. And again, how it's applied and who it's applied to. And then as far as the commercial in the broader town, I think, to me at least, the distinction of the light industrial, you know, somebody's small woodworking shop versus somebody having a store, you know, on whether it be on Pomfret Road or a back road somewhere, is traffic. You're going to have a lot less traffic potentially in a light industrial setting versus a commercial setting where people are coming in to buy things. But, you know, again, it's, you know, it's tricky. So I'm certainly not opposed to looking at any of that personally.
Right, but going back to the logic that was offered for allowing standalone light industrial, that it was clearly stated in the Planning Commission's letter that why not give the ZBA an opportunity to review these kinds of uses? And in the same vein as the ZBA might review an industrial use for impacts, whether it's traffic or noise or you name it, I would think the same would hold true for a retail establishment, is that you would want to offer the ZBA the same opportunity to review that kind of enterprise.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm opposed to, I'm just saying that's a potential.
Right, but that's where the conditional review process comes in, as was so argued as related to industrial uses. So I do want to talk about the sound standard though, and it's important somehow in the midst of the static over the sound provision, that really the only difference between the sound standard that it is in the settlement agreement that the board initially approved and the one that the Planning Commission originally proposed is that the sound provision in the settlement agreement has a restriction for the nighttime between 10 o'clock at night and 7:30 in the morning. And basically it lowers the standard to what equates to about a refrigerator running between the hours of 10 and 7:30 PM. So there's not a ton of functional difference, because I don't think it's unreasonable or too restrictive to have a sound provision that imposes some limitations at night. So otherwise the 70 dB level at the property line is pretty standard stuff. That's something you see, that's an Act 250 standard. And it's a pretty common standard throughout the state of Vermont. So
I think two of my issues from applying the settlement to everybody is, I think, what was it, till 7:30 in the morning, is that correct?
Yeah, till 7:30 in the morning, yeah.
I think that's potentially too restrictive on some current businesses that are here in town that have been here for a long time. And then the way the 45 decibels is measured, the location being different than the property line could be problematic.
Why is that?
Because that's not, it's measured at the residence, not the property line. So if you're in an extremely rural area, you could actually emit more noise at nighttime at a property line than during the day, which may and may not be an issue. But if it's 70 dB at the property line, and you're working close to the property line, emitting 90 dB, at the nighttime, their residence is, you know, 3,000 feet away, you could, you know, that 90 decibel at the property line would not be legal during the day, but it might be at night, because the closest house, they might actually be measuring 44. So is that fair, I guess? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, you can.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you can, but I mean, you can come up with a lot of different hypotheticals.
You know, the other thing, and I don't want to compare what we should have to a large town, also known as this is Burlington, so I don't think we need to do what a Burlington does. But if you read their noise pollution, you know, basically what it says is machinery, power equipment, and construction noise are prohibited from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. You know, they leave out a sound provision during the day. You know, I mean, I think Burlington is more congested, so, you know, you're potentially working on the property line all day long, and there's no way to keep it under 70 decibels.
Right. Well, you're in an urban environment too. Right. Whole different ball game.
But I think construction's a different ball game. I mean, if you're doing construction on your house in downtown Pomfret, you know, you're going to be over 70 decibels, certainly.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I could pull up the settlement agreement language, but I'm pretty sure it included a provision about temporary construction projects and things like that, that would be exceptions to the noise standard. Like, so, because I remember in our conversations with Joe McLean, when we developed the sound standard in the settlement agreement, he talked about how he has a neighbor who was doing a renovation project and how it was okay for a time that somebody's doing that, but if it goes on for too long, it becomes a problem. So there are instances, and in fact, when I can pull it up if you, why don't I just pull it up so we're not talking in vagaries here.
Could I make a comment?
As far as I'm concerned, yes.
I thought it was the Planning Commission's obligation to create zoning. And I thought that one of the discussions that took place in one of the hearings was that there was a need for some surveys and some public input. And I would be in favor of letting the Planning Commission do their job and send out a survey and have some public discussions where people can give their information. But I don't think it's right for the select board to be driving this bus.
Well, that's actually not, Ellen, I understand what you're saying, but that's actually not how the process is designed. So,
well, I know you don't want it to be designed that way.
No, I'm actually stating how it is structured in the law.
Well, I'm not sure that I buy it.
Well,
and
okay, but just because you don't buy it doesn't mean it's true.
No, but you have made other statements in meetings that have proven not to be true. So I think that the point of the way Pomfret has always functioned in the past is the Planning Commission has been given the obligation for these things. They recognized that they wanted to make some amendments to the zoning that was approved just recently. And I don't know what the big yank is to, within a month of having passed that, turn around and start making some amendments. I think that it's perfectly okay to have some time given to the public to have their input on noise and ordinances, and it can be done by a survey. But I don't know why you're pushing to have it determined at tonight's meeting.
I'm not. Actually, you're misunderstanding me, Ellen. All I'm suggesting, and the only reason this agenda item is on, is because while this subject is fresh, I think it makes a lot of sense for us to talk about having just adopted the zoning regulations. What are the inclinations of the board about improvements it would like to see? But the process, you're absolutely correct. The process starts with the Planning Commission. But the Planning Commission, it is a dual process where the Planning Commission develops proposals, the Select Board reviews those proposals, and just as occurred with the sound provision and industrial uses, the Select Board can amend. So the Select Board has a very direct role in choosing what goes in or out of the zoning regulations. So there's, in my view, absolutely nothing wrong with it at this juncture to simply have a conversation about what our inclinations might be so that we can guide any future amendments. And this is not, I think you might be misunderstanding this. This is not an attempt to direct the Planning Commission to do anything. It is an expression of what the Planning Commission, what the Select Board might wish to see in the future.
Well, because
this is Chuck.
My thought would be that we're getting into the weeds here. And I think generally a sound provision of some sort is something that Scott certainly would approve of. And John said that no sound ordinance wasn't necessarily his goal, but that this one was too strict. And I think that this planning commission will look at the sound provisions. They said they would. They're working on doing a study or getting ready to do a study. They're looking at that, I understand. And I think that if indeed the select board wishes to get involved before it comes to a select board hearing, which would be the ideal time, that they should sit in on some of those planning commission meetings and see just what they're coming up with. And also, that's a good time for input. To wait until after it's over is kind of late. But that being said, I don't think the board, or at least this part of the board, and that's a personal thing, is ready to make any guiding document as to what we as a board want to see in the zoning regulation. I kind of personally would like to see it work on a couple of ZBA hearings. It's already had a couple under this new ordinance already, and just see how it flies and see what the kinks in it are. And I think that's going to take a little more than just 2 weeks after adopting it to figure those things out. I have a feeling that the Planning Commission is well aware that some kind of sound ordinance is what some people at least want. But I think after their survey, they'll have a better idea.
I'm going to have a much clearer idea of what my inclinations are regarding the sound standards are after I hear what the Planning Commission comes up with in their work on this issue.
Yeah.
And so, I kind of agree. I think that maybe this is not the right time to spend a lot of time on that.
Not a lot, but it doesn't hurt even at this juncture just to get a gauge of where we're at. And so I think at a minimum, at least we're talking about a sound standard. So that's positive.
Yeah, well, okay. And we have talked about it. So I think that, you know, we need to wait. I mean, the Planning Commission told us that they're going to be working on this. And they're going to see what other towns have done and try to find towns that are a lot like Pomfret, I hope. I'm remembering Doug Tuttle writing a couple weeks ago about the fact that at his mother's house in the winter, they could hear the trains in West Hartford, but in the summer they couldn't.
Yeah, so,
it's hard to talk about a standard in Pomfret, but let's hope that the Planning Commission comes up with something that is something that we can all consider and be reasonable about. And so I think that's what our best procedure is, to wait until we hear from them.
I know they're working on it. I'm talking with a couple of them, so.
Yep.
Does anyone else wish to speak about this?
John Orr has his hand up, and Kathy.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
We can hear you.
I guess we just had a meeting Monday, and we've got three or four different surveys that we're working on. We've already looked at all the 30 towns in the Two Rivers, Ottauquechee encatchment area. And just for the record, I'd like to just point out that of the 30 towns, 11 of those towns have no zoning and no sound standard. There's 4 of those towns that have zoning, but no sound standard. There's 6 of those towns that fall into the same sound standard that we have currently in our zoning, which is the nuisance standard, which I understand certainly can be improved. But those towns that fall in with us are Bradford, Fairlie, Pomfret, Stockbridge, and Stratford. And then out of the 30 towns, there are 10 towns that have a specific sound standard. So there was a comment made at the last select board meeting, I think it was, that all towns have sound standards. And just from our limited research so far, that hasn't turned out to be the case.
Who's got that to them?
Right now, and we'll continue to work on it. And as Chuck said, we will have something to bring forth as soon as we can.
Great, awesome.
All right, we have Kathy Peters has her hand up.
I just wanted to add that as a member of the public, I think that Billy Emmons had mentioned that they were going to work hard on it. It sounds like John Moore is saying that they are already working on it. And it is, I am in agreement that it's a little premature to start adding new things on top of it before we give it a little bit of time for them to come up with some new suggestions, look those over, especially since the board just, you all but one person voted to uphold it again today. It would indicate to me that the board is happy with it as it is until they come back to the group with the new information that they'd offered they were going to get for everyone, that as a member of the public, I'd like to wait for them before we spend hours talking about more things that may or may not affect everyone or may or may not already be, sounds like they're being addressed elsewhere. We just don't know about it because it's only been a couple of weeks. So I just wanted to give everyone my opinion of the situation. And it sounds like they're already working on it. So it sounds like things are happening. We just don't see them happening because it's going on behind the scenes.
I mean, at a minimum, it's great. That it seems like we're all on the same page in terms of having some kind of sound provision. So that's great.
Any other comment before we move on? Okay. Next on the agenda is tax payment delay. Scott put that on the agenda. Ellen, are you still here?
I am. I do not have any particular information about that. I will get in touch with the people up at the state that I normally get the tax rates from and see if they have any inclination or knowledge about what the process is going to be.
I personally feel that we may indeed have to delay tax payments. We have done that before because the state information that we need to put out the tax bills was not available. And we may do that again, but I think right now it's premature to figure out how we're going to do that or when we might delay them to. I think we need a little more information. I think that all of the towns are concerned about it. I think the state is concerned about where they're going to get the money. I just got a letter as board chairman from VTRAN's Joel Perrigo saying that the Better Roads grants, which normally would have been awarded by now, are not going to be awarded right now. They don't know whether they're going to have any money, and they may not be awarded this year at all. And he would keep us all posted. So, and he did that because we applied for one. And so I don't think the state knows how they're going to come out financially, and I don't think we know either. So I do think it's something we should consider when we get there, but I think it's premature to do anything about it now.
Yeah, I think we should certainly consider it. When is our next tax payment due? I tend to not
August.
Want right. to think about these things. When?
August, right, Ellis?
August, yeah, that's what I thought. So
14th or 15th.
We have some time. I know that the town of Woodstock taxes were due on the 1st of May, and a lot of people were hoping that they would do something about it in Woodstock, but the governor, the legislature hadn't allowed him to do it at that point, and the town of Woodstock has found that they had received about 80% of the tax payments that they were expecting to receive, which is pretty good. So I think that we need to wait, and we certainly need to be aware of it, and something we certainly should consider, but we can wait.
We can wait, but I don't know that we have as much time as maybe we think we do, because our fiscal year starts on July 1. So we start spending money, you know, of course, as of July 1. And whether we delay tax payments or not, we'll need to decide relatively soon after the start of the fiscal year, because that's going to have a spending impact. We'll have to decide whether we want to spend according to our budget or whether we want to make some budget adjustments to, you know, lessen the cash outflow for starting July 1. So I don't think August is our operative date here. I think what's more relevant is July 1st. The other thing that it's also just good, whether we, you know, we're obviously not going to decide anything tonight, but I think it's important to elucidate for the public what exactly the board can do now that the bill has been signed. But effectively, we can, as a select board, we can move the tax payment date. We have the ability to either waive or establish grace periods otherwise adjust tax penalties, fees, interests, and things like that. So it's pretty comprehensive. And I would think that not only from our July 1 fiscal start date, just for public taxpayer awareness, they may want to know sooner than later whether they're going to be delayed and or whether their current interest accumulation is going to be forgiven or whatever. Whatever we choose to do, I think the public's going to want to have some advance notice on that. So I guess what I'm saying is we may not have as much time as we think we do to chew on this.
Ben has his hand up.
In a second, so apologies if I missed something relevant here. But I don't think anyone will begrudge anyone for delaying tax payments or waiving penalties, but can those be changed since that was the subject of a town meeting vote?
Yes. That's basically the upshot of the bill that was signed, is that that power has been now temporarily entrusted with the select board to delay that date.
That's great. Thanks.
Well, I guess I don't know. I mean, I understand what you're saying about July 1st, and that's important, but I think that, I mean, we certainly don't want to announce that we're going to delay the tax payment date, because then we can be guaranteed, of course, that our funds are going to be delayed. And if we also at that time say that we're going to waive penalties and interest, then of course then there's no penalty to be paid for paying late. So I think that we need to be careful about it. I don't want to put anybody in a difficult financial situation, but I think that we need to sort of tread lightly on that before we really decide about it.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. My only point is that we may not be able to delay this conversation to deliberate carefully over it until July or August. We may need to do our deliberations in June, is what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
Scott, that we may need to at least figure out what we're going to potentially do and adjust that as more information comes from the state. But I think delaying collecting taxes, providing we have all the information to send out bills on time, and we'll have to set up, I suppose, potentially some kind of a process for those that can't pay on time, with potentially waiving interest or whatever it might be through some kind of a process on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, doing something just broadly for everyone, it will make it, well, if I can pay 30 days late, then I'll just pay 30 days late, even if they can, you know, afford to, because we'll have a cash flow problem if we just let everybody pay late. So
yeah,
it could be a difficult, tricky process. So
yeah, is that something we could do on a case by case basis? I mean,
I don't
or
know.
Could we consider, you know, waiving penalties and interest on a case by case basis after the fact?
The Board of Civil Authority can do that.
The way it works,
tax abatement matter.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. That's what I'm wondering. You know, is it like an abatement?
They have that authority. Now, the point that I was trying to make is that right now yes, there may be a problem. Probably there will be a problem. However, we don't have enough information right now from the state as to even if we wanted to send out tax bills, whether it, when we normally would, we may not have the information from the state in order to be able to send those tax bills out. So the bottom line is the voters have what, Ellen, 30 days from the tax bills have to be out 30 days before the taxes are due?
That's right.
And so if we don't have the information in the early part of July that is necessary to manufacture the tax bills, then indeed the tax bills are going to be delayed anyway, and so will the due date, whether we like it or not. Right now, the state is in, I am assuming, the state is in such a state of flux because of reduced revenues, increased costs, and COVID-19, that we just don't know where we're standing. And if you don't know on what piece of ground you're standing, you can't make any kind of intelligent decision. I'm not saying we should delay or shouldn't delay. I'm just saying we don't have the information to know at this particular juncture what to do. And your point is well taken, and I made it a month ago. We may have to borrow money in order to float, because taxes will probably be delayed anyway because of the state being late with income taxes. And so we have to be prepared for that. But I think it is a conversation you can't wait too long to have, but we don't have any information right now.
Well, I guess I would just caution the board that we may not have to make some decisions where we don't have all the information. And that may be the reality we're in, unfortunately, for better or for worse. And I would recommend that we probably have June, you know, we have two meetings in June, unless we schedule some special meetings. But we've got our two meetings in June, and this is gonna take, I imagine, more than one meeting for us to work through this. So again, I'm just suggesting that while there's nothing to decide tonight, I think it's gonna be on us pretty quickly here, if we're gonna do anything at all. We need to talk about it probably in June.
Well, we hopefully will have more information then as well. Anyone else want to have any input on this one? Moving on, compensation package.
I don't have any updates on the compensation plan itself. But I think where we started with this in the beginning was a discussion about adjusting Jimmy's base wage. And that's what prompted this whole discussion about having a compensation package in the first place. But without getting into the details, it looks like we're not going to make a lot of headway on the compensation plan itself. But I also don't want to hold up I don't think we should hold up adjusting Jimmy's base wage if it needs to be raised. And I would say, even based on the cursory analysis I've done so far, we would comfortably, without doing any further analysis, I think we could comfortably peg his base wage at somewhere between $26 and $27 an hour. And we can talk about the rest of the compensation plan later on and how to move forward on that. But simply just to adjust Jimmy's base wage to what might be more in keeping with the market, I think we could. I would move for tonight, if this is permissible on the agenda item. And actually, before I make a motion, would that be permissible under the agenda item to make a motion to set Jim's wage?
No, I don't think it would.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, that would be a question for you to answer.
why don't we tee it up for another meeting then? And but that's kind of my take on it is until
Jimmy came on board about the 1st of June. I don't remember the exact date. And so he is up for an annual review, which the board has to do. And we had delayed that because of COVID-19. The restrictions may be lifted enough so that we can meet with Jimmy and have an evaluation. And it seems to me that considering we're in the third week of May, that we would do that when his anniversary date comes around. And then the whole thing would be done when it actually should be done. But to be quite honest, compensation package, if what was worded at the last, at the meeting where we voted to adopt the zoning regulations wasn't specific enough, certainly this is not.
Sure.
That's what I meant when I said, Scott, that's a question for you to answer.
Yes, yeah, well, it's a question for all of us to answer, but I think you're right. It's not, it wouldn't be a proper subject to take up tonight.
Right.
But coming back around to the compensation plan is, if we're going to keep trying to work on this, I've tried to lay out the questions we need to address. There's the whole analysis on base wages that we can continue to do. But then there's also this other question around all the lingering questions around other either appointed or elected officials and how they're compensated. So I think just to plot out the next steps is we just need to carry on. If we're going to keep working on the compensation plan, we need to keep working on analyzing base wages and what those should be. And then also grappling with the questions around compensation for elected and appointed officials. So those are really the next steps.
Any other input? Shall we move on to the next item? Oh no, we're going to do dog complaints, issues. How did you word that, John?
It was whether we want to discuss it in broad terms or more narrow terms from some of the couple of recent incidents we've had is what I had said. To start broadly, we have no dog officer in town, so there's no person that's responsible other than the board for this, which is problematic. There's nobody to make a complaint to, and then somebody that's able to immediately follow up with that. And then more narrow terms, there's been a couple of issues, one being my wife, and another one, I believe the Zones on Bartlett Brook Road having an issue with one family of dogs, and then my wife having another issue while riding with another dog as well up there. So,
do you think letters would be appropriate, John, to say?
I think that would be a start, would be fine. I would think that's where we would start. Both, one of the houses is right on the road. And then the other one, they're, the property, the house is fairly close and the property directly abuts the road. Neither Kathy could speak better if she wanted to. I think she's still on. Bit anybody, but running out in the road uncontrolled, which is technically against the town and the state leash law, because the dogs are uncontrolled. Startling Kathy's horse, causing her to fall off in the middle of the road. So
I know with the other dog, it was brought to my attention by young Mr. Zone, and the dog is menacing. Whether he would have bitten him or not, he was jogging on the road, and the dog came out, was quite menacing, and he felt uncomfortable, and he turned around and went back. The dog did not chase him, but these dogs, it's the similar incident that was, it's a similar thing that was going on up on Skyline Drive. These dogs are just left out loose to run.
Right.
And it makes it hard for, you know, these roads, yes, they're primarily for cars, but they're also, they're a resource for people that want to walk or jog or ride horseback or whatever they want to do. And I think there is a leash law, and maybe these people need to be reminded of it. And it's as simple as that, before someone gets bitten rather than after.
Right.
And so I'd be more than happy to write a letter to the individuals that own these dogs. Would you be willing to help craft that letter, John?
Sure. Gabby, hand up if you want to.
So that if the board thinks that we should do that and say there's been a couple incidences, and just remind them that there is a leash law and the dog should be under control at all times. In the Skyline incident, a letter and a discussion with the individual pretty much took care of the problem. And or at least, let's put it this way, we haven't had any more complaints, so I'm assuming it did. But the roads are there for everyone to use. And
yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm not even sure that the roads really are primarily for the use of cars. I mean, that's the majority of the use. But I'm not sure that's exactly right. So nobody should have to be
under state law, walkers as well as horseback riders. I'm not sure about bicyclists. I know they have to follow the rules of cars, but
sure,
walkers, yeah, and horseback riders have the right of way, you know, as far as cars are concerned on roads. So
yeah.
Do you want to speak, Kathy? Your hand's up.
Anyone wants to hear from me, I'll share information. Otherwise, I'll keep quiet. It doesn't matter.
Why don't you tell us what happened with your with the dogs, and then we'll have a better understanding.
Okay, so obviously I don't spend a lot of time on back roads, and it seems lately every time I do, there's a dog sitting in the middle of the road, be it on foot or be it by car or be it on horseback. And I realize that horses are certainly a bigger distraction to a dog than a human or a car or something else, because they're not always there. But needless to say, the two latest incidents were on Bartlett Brook Road. One of the dogs, and I don't know that you guys want me to use names. You can add names later. It's up to you. But one of the dogs is extraordinarily menacing. And there's generally someone sitting in the house because you can see them in the window, and they completely disregard the dog with its hackles up, aggressively barking at human passerbys, horse and human passerbys, or anything else. And even when they're outside, they mostly ignore it until after you've gone by, and then they go, come here, come here, come on, and then they put it in the house, which is kind of a little late if you ask me. The most recent episode was a dog that jumped down over a bank into the middle of the road with an oncoming car the other way, and my daughter and I coming the opposite direction with horses. So it landed in the middle of the road barking at us. And of course my horse took off for the hills because she's afraid of everything. And I got left in the road. Apparently my daughter saw that they were playing fetch in the backyard. The man never came out, never asked how I was or anything. The car guy was very nice and asked if I needed anything, because of course I didn't get back on my horse right away because I had to get past the barking dog. But the owner of the dog never showed his face at all, never came out, never said anything, never called the dog, never even tried to retrieve the thing out of the road, despite the fact that I bit the dust and battered myself up, scared my horse to death. Of course, my daughter's laughing the whole time. Thanks, kid. But anyway, And it just seems like they ought to at least be responsible enough to attempt to retrieve the unfriendly dog standing in the middle road barking at people. And it happens every time we go up there. So after the most recent episode of my falling on my face, I just am not going up there anymore. And it seems a shame because it's nice access to several different areas in Pomfret because you can go through back trails and go quite a distance without too much car traffic, which isn't the case on the main road here. But it's not worth it to me or for me to go with my daughter, and I can't send her alone because the same thing will happen to her that happens to me, which is the reason I'm there, because if no one's there to see her bite the dust, then how do I know what's happened to her? So it just seems like if there is a leash law, people should at least try to retrieve these obnoxious pets.
Thank you, Kathy.
Anytime.
We've got a very clear dog ordinance that covers all of this. And I think it's very kind, the kind approach, if you will, is to do the letter approach and say, hey, please, you know, get better control of your dogs and don't let this happen anymore. And that's a really nice approach. And I remember a couple of years ago when I was cycling in Sharon, I got bit pretty badly by a dog in Sharon, and I contacted the Sharon Select Board, and they did the same thing. They wrote a letter, and everything was resolved by letter, and it was fine. And so that's sort of the easy way to handle it if it works. But our dog ordinance has a lot of teeth to it, for not to make a pun, but we've got a lot of enforcement capability in our zone, in our dog ordinance. And it just occurred to me, though, in looking at our ordinance, that since we haven't had a town constable in a while now, it also specifies that we can enlist the sheriff to enforce our dog ordinance. And what I would recommend, since, as John pointed out, it doesn't really make a lot of practical sense for the select board or a select board member to play enforcement officer. We should, if the board wants to consider it, for lack of having a constable, we may want to contact the Windsor County Sheriff's Department and see if we can have them on call to help enforce our dog ordinance, so that if it goes past the letter stage, if the problem continues, then you make a phone call to the sheriff and the sheriff makes the next move. And that would be maybe the right course of action.
Yeah.
Well, shall we start with the letter though and see what happens?
Absolutely, but and we don't need to decide it tonight, but what I would suggest to the board is, from an enforcement standpoint, we have a conversation about contacting the sheriff's department to see if they will agree to being on call to, if we need to call upon them for the next stage, that they be available to do that.
The language in there being sheriffs, because that's what you used to have for police protection. Now that we don't have a contract, do we want to try the state police? I don't know if they'll deal with dogs. So.
I don't think VSP will do that. I don't think that's in their domain, but we can contract separately with the county sheriff's department to, just for this specific purpose, if they're willing. I don't know that they'd be willing.
Right.
But we could ask.
Yes.
Okay. But in the meantime, a letter.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. I don't think we need a motion on that. We'll just get a letter together and send it to the individuals, the owners, and see what happens and see if we can stop the incidents from occurring. Any other comments on this one?
No, but I'd love to see that letter before it gets sent out to the dog owner, just to eyeball it.
Okay. Okay, next item, Artistry Purple Crayon Sound Ordinance, possible executive session. I put the possible executive session on there. Just to be careful, cautious. I don't think we need it. I got a letter from Joe McLean a couple of weeks ago, just after our meeting of May 6th. And it was a few days after that. and Artistry Purple Crayons attorney, whose name I can never pronounce correctly, so I won't. But Scott knows who she is, and it's not a hidden fact.
Bopal is her name.
How do you call it?
Bopal.
Thank you. Anyway, Attorney Bopal contacted Joe McLean regarding our adoption of the zoning ordinance regulations without a sound provision in them. And he did not know how to reply. And I said that I had no authority at this point. The negotiations were over. And I had no authority to tell him how to reply. And so we need to, I think at the very least, we need to decide how we wish for Joe McLean to reply to Ms. Bopal's query regarding the zoning regulation. And only from my point of view, I guess I would say it is what it is, and the Planning Commission is working on, is going to work on coming up with a standalone sound regulation, and they're working on that now, and that's the here and the now of it. And but that's just my opinion. But the board does need to make some decision. We should at least get Joe McLean to respond in some way, even if it's only to say the zoning regulation has been adopted and ratified, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, I would just have him reply that the Planning Commission is still working on something that will hopefully fit the entire town, you know. I don't know, Zoe, really want to put more into it than that at this point until we get to the point that we either change what they come up with or adopt it or don't adopt it, or there's, in my opinion, too many variables to say much more than that right now, other than that the Planning Commission is committed to crafting a document.
Well, I think that's a fair thing to say, but the board has to decide that. And, you know, I felt I had no authority to tell him how to reply. And I emailed him back and said I felt that way, that I didn't have that authority. It was a board decision. And I think that being straightforward is the way to go.
From my personal side of things, you know, we may and may not have said that we may and may not do certain things as either the people that were negotiating with Artistry or a board. I don't personally remember that conversation about what they're talking about. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. I don't personally remember that during the process, but the fact is there is nothing in the settlement agreement that ties us to anything any more than them agreeing not to seek a tax exemption status. So it's not that I want to bring that into it, but because it's kind of separate but isn't. So to me, the appropriate reply is what I stated earlier. So
that seems like a fine response. I guess the only thing that would, couple of things that come to mind. One is that would very clearly set an expectation. You know, details aside, it would certainly set an expectation that somewhere in the not too distant future, there will be a sound provision offered for adoption. And so that would be creating the sense that we're making a promise. And so that, you know, we just have to be mindful that that's what we're doing.
I think that the only promise that I would make is that the Planning Commission is working on something, but that does not mean in any way, shape, or form that a sound ordinance will be adopted. I would not make that promise. I will not make that promise that I will vote on one. I will make the promise that I will look at whatever they come up with and consider it. But that's the only promise that I would make as a member of the board.
So I think what's important here, because I don't know that we're necessarily going to be unified in delivering a message back. So that is something to be careful of, because John clearly has a message that works for him. And maybe there might be some unity in messaging here, but that's a tricky needle to thread, because again, it may set some expectations.
Well, maybe the thing for us to have Joe McLean say is quite simple. The ordinance has been adopted by the select board. It has been the adoption has been ratified by the select board. It is what it is. And we can make no guarantees. If the plan commission comes up with something, fine. But at this point, the select board is done with it for the moment. The planning commission is working on things. And that's going to be a work in progress. Or we can just say the zoning regulation is what it is, and that certainly is not binding us to any agreement whatsoever or any promise. It's a fact. We have adopted the zoning regulation, and that's what we're going to have to, the Zoning Board of Adjustment is going to have to work with the near future. And we can say just that, and that's fine. From my point of view, that's fine. We don't need to offer any more information than that. Kathleen Dolan is an intelligent person. She knows, I'm sure she reads the minutes or she listens to the recordings. She knows what's going on in town just as well as the rest of us do. So maybe the less said, the better. I do think that we should have Joe make some response.
John Moore has his hand up.
I think you might want to say less than more. You know, the Planning Commission will have a hearing. You will have a hearing. Somebody could appeal it to a town vote, and the voters could decide whatever they decide, and they may not include a sound ordinance. So don't put yourself in a box.
That seems reasonable to me.
Okay, so I mean, it sounds like the simple message is the zoning regulations were adopted without a sound provision. And end of story.
That certainly is a truthful statement, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think we're all agreeing here that the more that is said, the more danger there is in setting expectations.
So I will just send an email to Joe saying that indeed the zoning regulations have been adopted and ratified, and they are what they are.
So to my second point is, it's not going to take a ton of time for Joe to make that response. You know, that's a 15 minute response at most. But I wonder if we want to, if we're necessarily going to have to authorize an expenditure here for Joe to respond to Beth, do we want to limit it to say an hour of time, just to account for the possibility that Beth might have a follow-on question, and basically to say, Joe, you can spend up to an hour's worth of billing to A, convey the original message, and B, respond to Beth, but beyond that, you know, you'll have to come back to the board.
We can do that if you want to. That's the board's decision.
I'm just trying to anticipate that there will probably be a follow-on question from Beth.
Which case, we would all get a copy of that question, and then the question would come to us again as to whether or not Joe should respond.
So you want to do it that way, Chuck, is just keep kind of going in serial and every 2 weeks kind of approve him responding to...
I certainly hope it doesn't happen that way.
Well, I'm just, I'm,
But are you saying that, you know, let's authorize Joe to respond to Beth, and then if she responds to him again, but we're going to want to know what she said and what and how to guide him.
So
we can't tell him, yeah, you can work for an hour and respond to her a couple of times.
I suggest we just tell Joe to respond to Beth. The zoning regulations have been, and I will make a motion. I move that we have Joe McLean respond to Beth Bopel's inquiry regarding the zoning regulations, that indeed the zoning regulations have been adopted by the select board on May 6th, and that adoption has been ratified on May 20, and that those regulations are now in effect as they have been since the Planning Commission hearing back on, was that the 23rd of July, John?
But that wouldn't be correct, Emily.
Yeah, those zoning regulations have been in effect.
No, but the zoning regulations from July actually had a sound permit.
That's true. So we'll leave that out. Just the zoning regulations have been adopted, and the adoption has been ratified, and they are what they are.
Instead of saying they are what they are, just say it doesn't include a sound provision. That will answer the question.
Well, that's fine too.
Yeah, I'm sure Joe would word it that way. That,
but anyway.
Yeah.
Emily, you almost fell into the trap of saying too much.
Have to be careful, don't I?
Right. Well, that sounds fine.
Is there a second to that motion? And we'll vote on it, and then we might be done.
Second.
Oh, Joe, Chuck beat me.
All those in favor, John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Okay, next item. Select board correspondence. You've heard about everything that I have heard about. Review of assignments. John and I are going to do a letter.
And we will circulate it before we send it.
Yeah, we'll circulate it. What else? I will let D&D bid results. And
truck RFP.
Steve is going to do the truck RFP with John. Anything else? We've got to do the Dan
Maxim
driveway permit. I will have to get a copy of that. I'll have to get a copy of that from Becky. I don't have that before me. And that permit, by the way, you asked about procedure, Chuck, after your visit. The permit, we give him the permit, but it does not become final until after an inspection, after he has put the permit in. Okay. So in other words, he gets the permit with these conditions, and then somebody after he puts it in has to go look at it and make sure it follows the guidelines that he was given. And then he gets a final sign off on it.
So after he has created the access.
After he has created the access.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Steve, do you want to talk to the fire department regarding this road closure?
I can do that.
Seeing that your wife might be the second in command.
I'll take care of that. Yep.
Are you willing to do that even though it's a family matter?
Oh, sure.
That would be great. Chuck, would you like to talk to Sean about it?
Yeah, sure.
That would be great. Anything yep. else that needs to get done? We ought to be thinking for the next meeting. Jimmy's review is up. I'll be honest, I haven't listened to any of the last few press conferences that Governor Scott has given? And is there any possibility that an in-person meeting could happen with Jim regarding his review?
Well, I think if we did it at the town hall and spaced ourselves out appropriately, we would be fine.
Is that something that we all would be comfortable with?
I think so.
The only hard part about that is that would be an executive session, and that would be fine because we could.
That's right, because you wouldn't need internet access.
Right, but we could space our. What I'm saying is, we could space ourselves out in an executive session. The only sticky wicket is we would have to start the meeting in an open meeting, and if we had a lot of people there, you know, we'd have to make sure. It's kind of hard because we basically be telling people, hey, don't show up for the open meeting portion because we're going to do an executive session.
If we do it on a special night where it's only an executive session, I suppose we could open the meeting into, because we have to open in public, we could do it outside in the parking lot, I suppose.
I was going to suggest that, yeah.
Resign ourselves to going inside, you know, go into executive session and then go inside.
I don't think it. I think we need to keep on task as to getting an evaluation review out in a reasonable length of time at his year anniversary. That being said, Jimmy has got a lot on his plate right now, kind of running roughshod with Pike and keeping things going up there, and getting the ditching done, and doing a few other things. I don't want to put any pressure on him so that he has to spend more hours. He's already, he's spending quite a bit of time trying to keep them on task up there and getting the job done right. But I think we need to make sure that we don't let that go until the 15th of December.
What about, just as a suggestion, because I think there's going to be an announcement, more announcement on June 15th. Of what's going on.
Well, we could wait until then as well. But just so that we don't forget it completely, I think it's really important.
No, I absolutely. We need to do it. Also, Cynthia's overdue for hers, so we got to do this.
Maybe we could do them both at the same night.
Maybe.
But I haven't listened to what the governor has said for a little bit, so I'm kind of deficient there.
I think we're at 10 people still, but no matter what, no matter how many people we're talking about, it's got to be
up the social distance.
Yeah, you got to do the social distancing.
Anyway, so that's something to think about. Agenda items for the next meeting. Cindy, what have you got?
A truck RFP. Scott wanted to look at the select board list of documents for revision. And whenever we decide to do Jim's review.
That won't probably be at the next meeting.
And that further culvert, et cetera, discussions with John Harrington.
Pike, yep. I'll give him an email and maybe I can get some clarity. Scott, just a question. When you went through that review for your FEMA documentation, mm-hmm. and the gentleman sent back a list of things that we should do, one of those policies needed to be changed, just a few words to make FEMA happy, or the federal government happy.
Yeah.
Do you have those? We should do that right away. And, okay. Can you kind of bring that to our attention?
Yeah, that's low-hanging fruit. We can do that.
That's really kind of important if we're going to be in the FEMA business, is it not?
It is, but we don't have anything immediately pressing around FEMA. But
okay, I will take up an appropriate motion.
Make a motion, we adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor? John?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Chuck?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Steve, you ought to go on video, because if your picture was there too, then I could remember all four of you easily.
Where's yours? Where's yours? I don't see yours tonight.
Well, mine never is there, so I don't want to break the machine.
So, but in our last meeting.
So if you were over there, then I would know that it was. I should call on you. I'm just calling people in the order that they appear in the little boxes.
Okay, we'll work on that.
We're adjourned. Have a good night, guys.
Night.
Same to y'all.